Tackle five, this is the last. It's bounced away to Thurston. Comes up Blair, got rid of Blair. Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball away. And Felt. Felt has scored. Felt has scored in the corner.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you enjoyed our first podcast last week. We're back again and here with my co-host, Drew. Talk about teams, if there's been any changes with our teams. Talk about three of the new rules that we find rather interesting, both from a Supercoach perspective and from an NRL perspective. And then we're both going to have a bit of a chat about our two teams we follow. Like, obviously, Broncos fan myself and Drew's a avid Souths fan. So welcome aboard, Drew.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, hopefully you listeners enjoyed the first podcast last week. Hoping to do this on a more regular basis this year. I know myself, I've been pretty, like, I've been busy around the house, but yeah, been able to do a bit more stat diving in the preseason. Obviously, each year I go back to school on Monday. I went back yesterday for the first day, so busy time of the year starts up soon. Yourself?
Yeah, I've just been poking around the house. I work shift work myself, so I work an even time roster. I work sort of on, days off, but days off. I've been diving into the Supercoach and trying to get my head around a few things. These new rules are going to change the way we play the game, I think. There was a time when we used to play Supercoach. We used to do a lot of buy planning, but the last few years there hasn't really been too much of buy planning that needs to go into it. We sort of just take the win or take the loss, depending on where you are and whatnot. But yeah, it's going to make an interesting season this year.
Oh, definitely. I know myself, I usually sort of struggle around the buys. Don't know whether to like stick to the head-to-head, like in a few cash leagues, or go overall and hold a few of them guns. But this year, I think it makes it a lot easier, I would say, to hold some guns and go with a few more risky picks for that round 13 buy and the big buy rounds.
Yeah, I agree. I've got a list of rules here that I'd like to talk about. So the first one is the top 13. So I'm sure we're all aware that during the buy rounds this season, they are taking the top 13 scores that you've got. So instead of trying to field a team of 17 players, even if you do have 17 or 15, 14, whatever you may have just the 13, the app will be taking the top 13 scores. So that can open up a whole different cabinet of strategy, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's like, I know myself, I think I ran with about 12 last year. And that really sets you back for anyone who fills in a whole 17. What about yourself?
Yeah. 13 is the magic number. We hear about it all the time. So just on previous seasons, like we sort of aim to have 13, or some players sort of stack that first bye week with as many as they can. So 17, but then follow up with having 12 or 13. So I think 13's the magic number each week, but it can open up some strategy, as in, like, when buyers come up, we go for them players that are popular and most teams have. So like your Joey Manu, your Alex Johnston's another one that seems to pop his name up every buy round. So I think if you've got, say you've got 15 players and, you know, Alex Johnston or Manu or similar people come up in discussion, we can sort of antipod them as well. Like if everyone's jumping on Alex Johnston because he's the standout winger for the teams that are playing, you can have him, but obviously have 14 and have a bit of a smoky there. So if Alex Johnston was to have one of them games where he scores 15 points, we all know he can do that. He'll drop out of your top 13, and other players might not be able to exclude him from the 13.
So yeah,
you've got a good antipod opportunity. It opens it up at both ends, I think.
Do you want to just have a look at the first the teams that play the round 13 bye?
Yeah, let me open it up.
Well, I've got it in front of me. So we got Dragons play the Dolphins.
Yep, I got it here. Yep.
Seagulls versus the Knights. You've got the Raiders versus Rabbitohs. Warriors versus Broncos. Eels versus Cowboys. So they're the eight teams that are playing round 13.
Yep.
And I think something you have to take into consideration there is, like, obviously if Tommy Turbo's fit and starts the season, he makes it to round 13, God willing, he's a walk-in start for the Blues. So you obviously, like, the Seagulls, how do they play this year? I straight away look at, say, a Ruben Garrick as a perfect pickup in that early 13 rounds, because he'd be straight in. You'd guarantee, probably looking at he's locked in to play fullback that round. He'd be perfect for that 13 bye round. Someone like the team, like the Cowboys, that they'll have a lot of maybe a few outs. But Dearden could be called in if there's an injury to Munster or Cherry Evans. You could have, like, Val Holmes is going to be in there. Ruben Cotter, they'll all be in State of Origin. So they're sort of missing a few. Similar to the Rabbitohs, like we talked about Alex Johnson, and they're playing the Raiders, which is, I know you've got Wyden in the team, but it's really an unchanged roster, like where Rabbitohs would be losing Cameron Murray, maybe Damian Cook. So is Alex Johnson going to be as lethal then? So there's things to think about too.
Another thing to think about is it even worth trying to field a solid 13 within this round? Because you look at the teams that aren't playing, you've got Penrith, Roosters, Sharks, Storm, Titans, Tigers and Bulldogs. They've all got Supercoach guns in them. So if this is the first bye round, you know, you'd be crazy to trade out. Well, not crazy, but if you're getting rid of your Tedesco, your Cleary, your Hines, even Munster, Grant, they'll be hard to leave on the pine through the Origin period, let alone throwing three standout buys in there as well.
Yeah, and like even like I've seen a few things saying like, oh, lock in your Eels players because they don't have a buy until round 14, and they play all the big buys. They've got a buy in round 14, so you might stack your team with three or four Eels players, and then in round 14, you're out four players.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same with Manly. Like, if you, like, go hard, you've got Tommy Turbo in the back there. Maybe you're still holding Schuster because he's doing well. You grab a Garrick. That's three Manly players. You have access to two for the round 13 bye, and then round 14, they've got the bye. So you're down three players again.
Yeah. Yeah, the Eels comments, a bit of a trap, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is a lot of forethinking that really needs to go into that this year. Like, because there is so many buys, like, we've got a buy every week now that we need to consider. So, you know, I am one that always starts really strong every season. So I will float around the top 5,000, the top 2,500, 2,000, you know, top 1-3% every year for the first, first 10 rounds or something. But that's purely because I start strong with my team as well. So I like to start with a few nuffs. But this year, I really don't think you can afford to do that because you'll be blowing trades so fast.
Yeah, I think we touched on it slightly last week. I think maybe one nuff is probably enough, like, if you have to. And then if someone comes along, like a low end bottom dollar guy comes along and gets a crack, and you think, oh, all right, I've got this trade this week, like, go for it. But yeah, like, looking across the buyers at round 16 and 19, I do like Hines, and because he does play that round 16, he plays round 19 as well. Obviously, if he isn't in the state in the Blues team, so he does play two of the big buy rounds. And like Joe Tarpany, like, I do like him because he plays the first big buy round and he plays the last big buy round. So he's someone you could probably lock in from the start and have all year, depending how he's going. But yeah, so I don't mind the idea of the top 13 because, like, some people, I think it's they're taken out of context. Like, yes, you still have to aim to get 13 valuable players, but you could throw in an extra two. So you could have 15 and you, like, that could pay off. That could waste your trades to get to that 15 number and then get them two extras as your top scorers. Yeah, it's a bit more of risk there. Like, you can take a few more risks, or you can just go, all right, I'm going to lock in 13, get a solid sort of average and just get through the buys.
I think with you're really going to have to choose your path this year, whether you are playing a head-to-head player or whether you're going to be an overall player. It's going to be really hard to balance both of them, whereas in the past we sort of done both. Like, we've got our own head-to-head league and we sort of concentrate on overall as well, because we sort of forfeit the buys in our head and sort of move forward, concentrate to overall. We just let the head-to-head sort of fall into place. But this year is going to be a bit different, I think. I think once all these buys start to kick off, and if you're an overall player and you're concentrating on that, these buys are really going to set a big gap in the pack, just like previous years, like 5-6 years ago when we used to play.
Yeah. All right, so what's the second big rule do you want to talk about?
We sort of just touched on it just then. So in my notes here, I've got about the buys aren't going to count in a 20-man public league. I really think that, because when you create a private league, you can select in your league settings whether you can include the buys or not include the buys. I think all the avid super coaches, nobody concentrates on public leagues anyway. So I don't know. I don't agree with that rule change. That's purely there. So in your 20-man public league, everybody can verse everyone twice, which makes it a bit fairer. So they forfeit the buys. The buys just don't count. But if you're a diehard super coach player, I don't think you're playing in public leagues anyway. You're creating private leagues with friends and stuff like that. So I think if people are creating private leagues, I think they're all going to include the buys. What do you reckon? Do you reckon people include the buys? I reckon they'll...
Well, I think it's like a way to either... If you start really strong, like you said, like I think last year I didn't start too strong round one because I had Grant and Munster both sit on the sideline. But sometimes players, teams are defensively stronger at the start of the year. It's a bit hotter. They're getting them into a bit of match fitness. Like, we're all expecting these big 70, 80 plus scores, and it's not always the case. So our scores aren't always the biggest that first round. But if you can start to get a good, like if you start to win your head-to-head games early on, come to buys, you don't have to, if you're focused solely on head-to-head or you're in a cash league, you don't have to worry about, all right, I'm going to chase these guys to get through this buy round and keep up the top there in my head-to-head. But then on the flip side, if you're falling behind and you're like, oh, I just lost last week, I just need to get up. I know I need to make it through into the eight. After the buys, you can burn all your trades to get yourself back up into the race. Where if that buy rounds, if you're taking them out, that takes that either getting the lead, going ahead and pulling, like not worrying about wasting trades, saving it for later date because you're so far ahead, or trying to get back into it. It sort of removes all that.
You can just leave it. You can just leave your team. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a bit of unnecessary change, that one.
Yeah, you can sit back and watch all the injuries unfold for Origin and stuff and then pick up the pieces with more trades the week after, I suppose.
Yeah, so the last rule change is actual NRL standpoint. And I'm just going to read it out to you. It's the one I was sort of touching on last week. I'd heard a little bit about it, the 10-meter compliance in general play. And the way they've worded it is active defenders must have both feet in line or behind the referee when setting the 10-meter defensive line. Referees will have the option of awarding a full penalty for multiple 10-meter breaches without requiring the mandatory use of the sin bin. Referees can still use the sin bin if they consider breaches to be deliberate or cynical. The changes will give further clarity to officials and teams around what constitutes a breach of the rules. So, like, straight away you think, and we were talking about this a little bit briefly, if I'm a forward running onto the ball and I know them guys are back that extra half a meter, because you want to get yourself set to run onto it, run up in the defensive line. So you stand in that split stance. You're not going to stand flat-footed in the defensive line. Is that going to like just slightly increase for a forward's perspective at the base stats or like all base stats in general? An extra, like the hit ups just under 8 meters going to go straight up to like, are we going to see more H8s? And our sort of, the forwards going to get a little bit of a tick up because they'll get them H8s or they'll hit the line and they've got just like 1 or 2 meters extra to make and they'll get into a H8 because of contact after like meters after contact.
I think so, definitely. You know, everyone's talking about Brandon Smith darting out from dummy half because essentially the defense set 11 meters back now, not necessarily 10. So I understand like the defense had their back foot on the line initially, like previous seasons, but this year both feet behind the line. I don't think we're going to find the defensive line both feet in line with the referee and them, you know, them trying to defend from there. They will have their front foot on in line with the referee and they'll have a back foot behind. Do you know what I mean? So essentially 11 meters.
And like you said there on, like, so I think like we might see a slight uptick in front, in forwards and second row forwards, like guys who are just our base.
Your David Clemmers and stuff like that. Like
they might get even a tackle bust here or there, like an extra tackle bust because you're running, you've got that extra half a meter or meter run. It's not going to be too drastic, but yeah, like I just looked at like even like we're all looking at these mid front row forwards and we're thinking, oh yeah, we're price, like I'm putting a cap on them about 60 is probably their max, like what I would say successful for these guys, but everything has to go right for them to get a 60 average. And like I could see this probably pushing them up to a 62 or something, not massive, but people might be looking into it, go, oh, this is great. It's done what I've wanted, where them top tier end guys might actually push their average up because of this rule. It's something like it might not happen, but it's just something I've thought about. And sorry, talking about Brandon Smith, like you said, I did look at like Aman Talk Supercoach on Twitter had a good post the other day about dummy half runs to go with this rule. And in 2022, looking at the hookers, the top three hookers who ran out, who made the most dummy half runs were Harry Grant, Brendan, Damian Cook and Robson.
Now, 22 last year.
In last year. So how many runs do you think Grant had more than Robson out of dummy half?
Out of dummy half?
Yeah.
Robson scored a lot of tries from dummy half last year. So I would say not much. I would say not much.
Yeah. So looking at it, so Grant, I'm pretty sure this is going on average, had 8.6 runs from dummy half. Cook had 5.6 and Robson had 5.5.
Yeah. Right.
And then like, obviously a big staple of a lot of teams is Brandon Smith, and he's the man we're talking about. Like on the defensive line, I don't think there is a lot of hookers that are as damaging as him with his build, like that small, stocky, he sees a line, he goes for it. And we've seen him do it for New Zealand. We've seen him do it for the Storm. In 2021, when he played a lot of hooker, he had 5.1 on average runs out of dummy half.
How many minutes was that? Like you're talking Robson and Cook both play 80 minutes, or they have been. Robson sort of played 80 minutes towards the end of the season there. But, you know, you just said 5 runs from Damian Cook, who plays 80 minutes a game.
Yeah.
But, you know, Grant and Smith sort of, you know, they share that role and stuff, and they had Wish out there and this and that and whatever. But, yeah, I wouldn't have picked Grant to have that much more, you know, average per game than those two.
Oh, well, so like, yeah, I think because he's got the 2021 there. So 2021, Grant had 8 runs out of dummy half on average. Cook had 7 runs out of dummy half. And like, it makes sense when he's an 80-minute hooker. Mm-hmm. Although we all said that was a year under Bennett and Bennett wouldn't let him run and he's regressed. So it's surprising he's still had seven runs out of dummy half per game. Mitch Rain was after that. I don't even know who he was playing for. Was he playing for the Titans or someone in 21?
Mitch Rain would get 10 runs out of dummy half in 10 minutes. He's such a ball hog.
And I think the discrepancy with Hook, with Grant is he did play a lot of games off the bench, Grant, so that 8 runs a game sort of represents that, I think, with Brent Smith already there taking impact. But Brandon Smith, like, he played most of the game starting 9, and he only averaged 60 minutes and still ran on average 5 runs out of half.
He loves it.
So I think like, if this rule does add anything, like, I could just see, Brandon Smith running over, scoring a few tries.
Yeah, definitely. It's sort of, I have heard and I've read a few articles about Brandon Smith darting over and stuff, but everyone's concerned that with Manu's new role at the moment with the roaming and stuff, you know, Manu's going to grab that ball 10, 15 metres out and run with it. But I think they signed Brandon Smith for a reason. I think they'll utilise him 10 metres from the line, that's for sure.
He does go on to he has a stat there on Manu, and Manu and Holmes actually were the top backs, not including hookers, and they both ran or had a 2.5 average runs out of half in 2022.
How much, sorry?
2.5 runs each. So okay. Manu and Holmes. One thing, I know Manu, like, yes, he had an amazing year last year and hard to death ride, and one that I'll definitely be looking to bring in as soon as I can. But a lot of his biggest scores, I would say, came playing either in the six when Kiri was out or at fullback. Yes, he was roaming, but then I also want to have, like, do you factor in that the latest talk is that Sui Ali is playing centre on the other side? Is he going to have a sort of license to do the same?
I would say not. I think Manu is going to definitely continue to roam and have that license. You can't give two people either side of the field that license, because I think you'll open yourself up defensively. But I think, obviously, we've all read Suwali's train in the house down. We hear that every year from every club about certain players. But I really like Suwali at left centre. That they are taking away that high ball opportunity away from both sides of the field with their attack, but Suwali and Tupou on that left side, they're going to adapt the bloody South attack. Everything is going to go left, I think.
So
who's playing on the right for the Roosters? Are they looking to who are they going to put there?
I think Paulo. Is it Paulo they got from your bloke, South?
Yeah,
him or Queensland State of Origin fullback, winner, hero, Corey Allen.
Oh, yes. Corey Allen.
No, I don't know. I don't know. It just makes it, Roosters are a great side. It's just hard. Even with Tedesco, it's so hard with so many different attacking options in the team. It's just, it's hard to just pin it down. So with the dummy halves and the chance to have more runs maybe or closer to line, has that changed your hooker rotation from last week?
It has, but not in regards to my starting hooker. So last week I announced I had Robson and Smith, but just mucking around with my team, I've gone back to Grant and Brandon Smith. I did see on, I think it was on a Facebook post on one of the Supercoach pages and stuff, people were concerned about Brandon Smith not getting all the points that everyone's hoping for, because there's so many superstars in that Roosters outfit that are going to take points from him. But it's no different to Harry Grant from the Melbourne Melbourne Storm. You know, they've got, you know, Pappenhausen. They once had Addo Carr and bloody Munster and everyone like that. Like, I don't think Brandon Smith's going to be robbed of points being in that Roosters outfit. But at the moment, I've got Grant and Smith. So I've done away with Robson. I just feel that I know I sort of talked Robson up last week because he's got a good draw and he should be playing 80 minutes if Granville just watches from row three on the sideline or something like that. But I think at some point you're going to need Grant and you're going to have to run home with him. So save myself a trade with all these buyers, I suppose, and just start with Grant. I'm probably expecting Robson to start a little bit stronger than Grant, but I think Grant wins it in the end, come the end of season.
Yeah. Now, just before we move on, so like, cause I'm the same, I'm Grant and Brendan Smith, and yeah, I think Storm start fast. I think Grant starts fast. I think, to be honest, Storm have got a stronger pack. I think they've lost a lot of experience there, but I think they've got a stronger pack. Just on our Manu talk and our Roosters talk, I know a lot of people are keen on Teddy to start the season. Mm. Are you keen on Teddy?
Oh, at the moment, Teddy's not in my team. At the moment, I have Latrell Mitchell and Tom Trbojevic.
Yep.
I don't have Mitchell purely because I'm a biased South fan. I've got Mitchell because of what he'd done at the back end of last year. I don't know what the chit-chat is around Tedesco, but at the moment he's not in my team. If I was to try to talk someone into not starting with him, it'd be pretty tough.
I know he's – and this is just going off the fly here. And I'm not on Tedesco. I'm on Latrell. Just going off like the way he came back last year, I was all against Latrell last year. Thought he was like just lazy. Couldn't reach the heights. But I just had a quick look at something, okay, and I pulled up some stats from last year just briefly. Now, we all remember that the 72-6 round 23 clash, Roosters versus West Tigers.
Roosters versus West Tigers.
Yep, they flogged them 72-6.
Oh, yes. I had Sam Walker as captain. Yep. I'm with you.
What do you think Tedesco scored that game?
Not much, because it's funny you bring this up, because there was a head-to-head semi or something, wasn't it? Because it was my Sam Walker versus my opponent's Tedesco, and he scored, I think he didn't even crack 100, did he? He scored 80 something?
He scored 109.
Oh, but it must have got updated because...
Yeah, but you think Tedesco, everyone's going on, all right, yep, Roos is going to flog teams. You think Tedesco is going to be in the mainstay of like the points or be up there? 72 points and he scored 109 points.
Yeah, not good. I didn't even watch that game. I was out of town, but I listened to probably the last 20 minutes on the radio in the car driving back home. Yeah.
But, you know, his biggest score before that, like he did have 144 that last year. He had 126 last year. He had 152 in round 19. He played 75 minutes against Knights. Okay, and they beat the Knights 42-12. Guess who didn't play that game?
What round was that?
That was round 19.
So 42-12, who didn't play? Well, obviously we're talking about Tedesco, so maybe Tedesco didn't play, Manu played fullback?
No, Tedesco scored the 152. Manu didn't play that game.
Yeah, right. So you're trying to say stat-wise that Manu's essentially robbing points from Tedesco. But Manu, when Roosters beat Tigers by 72 points, I don't think Manu scored very well either, because I was death riding him something fierce. He only scored 120 or something, didn't he?
Yeah, actually he scored like 58, but he was actually named in the 16, so I don't know if he was meant to play or was a late in. But yeah, like I know it's only picking them two games and looking at Manu, and I'm just sort of saying, are the points more spread across the board for the Roosters with so many attacking threats? Like, we just like looking at that, the team, Roosters flog a team 72-6 and Tedesco scores 109. It's not like, all right, Roosters are going to flog teams. Tedesco's all of a sudden going to be making like a heap of points.
I think in that 72 thrashing, because I had Sam Walker that week and I was watching him like a hawk, I was watching his points like a hawk. I think he scored 60 something in conversions and only had two try assists out of the 13 tries they scored or something. So
Walker had two try assists.
Yeah.
one off a line break, 48 yep. points in goals,
yeah,
22 base and power, but he only had 110. So, yeah, I just, yeah. Everyone thinking, oh, Tedesco is like, yep, lock him in. Roosters are going to roll teams and he's going to be in the thick of it and he's going to score. I think gone are the days he has them like consistent 120 pluses back to back to back to back. He's not the focal point at, like the whole time.
No, that's right.
And he, I think getting on a bit in his career, like not nothing against him, like he's a great player, but I think he sort of realises that himself, like I've got so many other options, I don't have to do everything.
Yeah, you look at Tom Trevoy, is probably a bad example. I was just about to talk about him, but yeah, you look at Latrell Mitchell and Tom Trevoyovich and the other fullbacks, you know, they're not trying to be a part of everything as well. So maybe Tedesco is realizing that. But just back on your 72 point thumping we talk about, like if you translate that 72, was it nil? 72 nil? 72 12?
72 to 6.
72 to 6. So if you had South Sydney 72 to 6 against the West Tigers, where do you think all their points would go? You would think that Mitchell and Walker would be 150, surely?
Oh, easy. Like, yeah, I'll pull something up. I'll come back to that. But looking at, like I know you brought up, here, I've got it here. So just looking at, where am I? Because I was looking at this the other day on try assists and tries. Like Alex Johnson had 30 tries for the season, but I was looking at try assists. Where are we going? Hang on. I'm just looking on the, so this is on the NRL site. We know the scoring's a bit different for NRL and Supercoach, for the fantasy in that and the Supercoach. But I was looking at Latrell, for example, because I know you just were yep. high on him. So try assists, Latrell had 17 try assists from 17 games. The highest try assist was Mitchell Moses for the season. He had 23 from 26 games.
Say that again.
So Latrell had 17 try assists from 17 games.
Yep.
Someone like Mitchell Moses had 23 try assists from 26 games, and he was the number one.
Yep.
And where is Tedesco had 12 try assists from 24 games.
Yeah, right.
So.
But you can't compare Moses to Mitchell. They played Moses to Tedesco. They played two different positions.
But But just like thinking of like even Hines last year had like Dally M, he had 21 try assists for 23 games, I think. So like he's the focal point in their attack. I think like what we're trying to get to is Latrell's the focal point in South's attack. Moses is sort of the focal point in Eels' attack. Like where Tedesco doesn't have to be relied on to be the focal point.
Yeah, I think the last couple of seasons that we've all been high on Tedesco, the Roosters have had Cooper Cronk there as well, who, let's be honest, done next to nothing but direct him around the park. So, you know, with Sam Walker and Keary there, that they're both demanding the ball either side or wherever they are, whereas I just felt like Cronk didn't demand the ball as much. It all went the other way. And yeah, they've only got one side to attack. Then Tedesco's there in the thick of it. So,
yeah. And Cronk was never really a high Supercoach scorer.
No, but I don't think Cronk's ever been in one of my Supercoach teams. But, man, if I was putting a team of 30 together on the weekend, I want Cronk there.
Oh, definitely. And who's your second fullback, sorry?
I've got Mitchell and Tom Trevoyovich. I'm pretty locked in on Latrell Mitchell. But yeah. Tom Trevoyovich is just there just to keep the money there, I suppose, so I don't spend it anywhere else when I keep mucking around with the team. But we'll have to wait and see what Tom brings back. I know Manly's got the bye in round two, so I'm not expecting Turbo to play round one, even if he is fit. I don't think he'll play round one regardless. So I might see him in round three. I think if he was to return or make his play his first game in round three, I would definitely have to reconsider starting with Turbo. But at the moment, I've got Mitchell and Turbo, but not sold on Mr. Trevoyovich too much yet.
I'm thinking, yeah, I think if he plays round three and that's when he starts, he's not in my side. But at what is he? He's 577K, and he's priced at a, I think it's like a 55 or something.
55, yep.
Yeah, he's priced at a 55, even though only averaged 61. So he got that bit of a downgrade due to injury. You look at like his first three games last year, like he came out, he was like a $1.2 million player, and everyone was like, do you start with him? Do you not? Blah, blah, blah. That there was, yeah.
I was just about to build on that. That's what really set people apart, all the overall players, starting with Trbojevic with that price tag. And, you know, a lot of people jumped off round three when their prices changed, but a lot of people stayed on him just for that antipod factor. If everyone's getting rid of him, they were holding him. So some people's Supercoach season last year was done by round five.
And like, yeah, that was coming off PVL ball. So, like, having a season before. So, like, that was crazy. But, like, I did want to look at, like, his price at what? Like, a 55, he averaged 61. There's a injury affected 64 minutes in that stretch. Now, he did start with Panthers, and that was a tough ask, but he scored 62. Then he played Roosters, got a 39, played the Bulldogs, and I think that was a pouring down rain, and people started to say, oh, yeah, like we're starting to see what we saw last year. He's running the ball up, blah, blah, blah. He got a 66. Then I think when he really started to – I started to look at him in round four and he started to really start to put it on against the Raiders, and he scored 87 in 80 minutes. The only problem was halfway through the game, I think he did his MCL and was playing on one leg, and he still managed at 87. Then the talk was, oh, he's injured again, blah, blah, blah. They sort of said, oh, it's going to be a 2-3 week recovery. They rushed him back by week nine. He scored a 78. A 23 and a 72 after that, and that was in the 64 minutes. And he wasn't right, I don't think, from the whole start of the season. But what I'm saying is, like, them scores are there, like that 87, 78, the 72. I know the 23's in there, but them scores are pretty good for someone who's running on one leg, who's priced at a 55-point average. If he comes back and he's fit to go, even if he's not in a trial, but and he lines up round one. I've been watching the footage of him over there with Bill Knowles.
Yeah,
seems to be getting through his work. If he comes back, he's still got a couple of weeks. I think he'll return soon. He's finishing up the train over there. But if he comes back, lines up round one, you can't go past him, I don't think.
Yeah, but you know, like I hear a lot of people comparing him to Latrell Mitchell. Like they're both gone over there, same injury, going over to the same specialist over there, returning in the same fashion. They're both very, very important parts of the team, Latrell Mitchell, Tom Trbojevic. And when Latrell Mitchell came back last year, he was dynamite. He was great. I think he was notching out a ton every second week. Are we going to see that from Tom Trbojevic? Like Manly's had a lot of dramas. I know it doesn't affect Tom Trbojevic as a player individually, but it really affects that Manly side. New coach as well. Like, and the stories are exactly the same. Like Latrell Mitchell, first year with JD at the helm and stuff, because JD's the one that pulled the trigger on sending him over there. I don't know if I'm not a fan of Seabold. I think everyone sort of knows that. You know that. I don't know. Do you really feel Tom Trbojevic is going to have the same strike power in that Manly outfit when he returns? Because Mitchell come back to a pretty great side. Manly finished so poorly last year.
I know what you're saying. But you got to think, like, South struggled for most of last year, and I know a lot of that was probably losing Latrell rather early, but, like, given Ilias the crack, like, their forwards, you don't think, oh, yeah, they're that impressive, but, like, obviously they've got Cameron Murray and he's a standout. But they've got – I know Manly's probably lacking a bit of forward power, like with Kepi and Paseka and Alloway. As the three probably guys putting their hand up, but you look at like Dez and what he's done with the minutes there, and he's like, he rarely gave him the minutes to actually prove themselves and sort of cement their position. So I think in with a change, like, yeah, I know we've said what we've said about Seibold, like he didn't really help Broncos, but I think they were already in a poor position anyway with Bennett leaving and all the negativity behind the scenes. But I don't know, Trbojevic is Trbojevic. He's like, he's Tommy Turbo for a reason. I just, if for any other reason, like I just think you risk it, like at that price, 55. He's got Bulldogs. The draw's not too hard. Like the buy round two is probably painful, but the draw's not really that hard for him and for Manly. Like, and I don't know, we've seen Manly, we've seen it year after year. It's a whole different club. It's a whole different team when Tommy Turbo plays and he's playing.
Yeah, the whole team plays better when Tom Trbojevic takes the field, that's for sure.
Yeah, so like they got Bulldogs round one. I don't see that as a, like, yes, Bulldogs are on the up, but they're still going to be forming them connections. So they might be working on their defense a bit more. Round three, Eels can be leaky. They've lost Marnie in the middle, lost IPAP on an edge. Like, there's a few changes there. South round four would be a good clash, but, you know, on the edges, Souths can be a bit leaky. Newcastle Knights, who knows what they're going to throw up round five. Then six and seven are probably the biggest asks in Panthers, but, like, even the top two, top three, top four teams this year have changed. Like, Panthers lose Appy, Panthers lose Kikau. How are they going to perform? What changes, what impacts that going to have? Storm, they don't have Pappy. They don't have J-Bum. They don't have K-Bum. They don't have Feliz, Kafusi. So there's change in the teams that the connections are still going to be forming into them five, six rounds, I think. So it's not all – it's like they're the probably two toughest teams, I'd say, and South City comes up against.
Yeah, it'll really test his injury out. That's for sure. Where are they playing? Sorry, I haven't really looked too heavily into the Tom Trbojevic thing. Are they playing at Brookie quite often? The first 10 rounds or something?
So they play at Brookie one against the Dogs, against Parramatta in round three. Then they're away to Souths, away to Newcastle, away to Panthers.
Yeah, see, maybe Turbo wants to get that round one or three at Brookie. You know, he might play round one, whether he's fit, if he's fit.
And then round seven, Melbourne at Brookie. And then, yeah, so I just think, yeah, I don't know. It's just something to – I think if he's fit and he lines up on the team sheet 5 minutes before the game, he looks like to run out, I'm locking him in.
Late minute change, hey?
Well, he's in there now, but like that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I think you have to watch right up to the last minute with him and have a get out strategy in case, because I don't want to carry him for two rounds. Even if he was saying, "Yep, you'll be good for round three," you don't know, and it's like it's a vital position that you just need. You can get so many points for. I wouldn't do it for three rounds.
Yeah, it'll be a wait and see for me. But I think, I don't know. I make those decisions with 5 minutes till kickoff. You know what I'm like.
Yeah.
Hey, what else have I got here? I got Broncos as a talking point. We want to go over that. So, do you want to take that away? We'll talk about Brisbane Broncos. So, you mentioned that they were in the top four on the ladder last year until round 20. What happened there? What talk us through it?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, no one sort of really. It was round 19. I look back. So round 20, we dropped down to five, and we lost back to back consecutive games up to the end of the season with games that we should have probably won. I think it was just probably a big season for some of our younger guys who got blooded, like Ezra Mam. He sort of come in midway through the year. Obviously, big expectation on him preseason, but he didn't come until round 11. And I think going into this season, yes, there's that second year syndrome, but I think he was rested one of the later games in the year as well, like round 25. But I think he sort of knows the expectation of first grade. He was, I think, sometimes a solid defender. So I think him being in there, he's settled. Reynolds is there if he can stay injury-free. We've got him settled there to organise the team. The other big inclusion, I think, was re-signing Walsh and getting him back. So I think that settles our fullback spot, even though Kevy came out and said, like, all positions are up for grabs and Farnsworth is training and Tessie New was training at fullback and it's up for anyone. Like, everyone, writing's on the wall. We know Walsh was going there for fullback. I think he has a lot of improvement in him from what we saw at the Warriors. And going from, like, the Warriors, like, nothing against them, like, to a team, the Broncos can put points on and people are sort of writing him off. Like, they were in the top four before, obviously, everything sort of went upside down, the season went on, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So they did pretty good throughout the year. We could score points. I think with the rookies as well being blooded, like Cobbo was a big one that it took a bit on him, a toll, the season as it went on. And you, like, obviously we've seen that now with like the comments he's made and that's come out in the podcast about Kevy. So I think him having another season there, like he had State of Origin last year, Cobbo, I think hopefully he's got his head screwed on. Someone's had a few words to him. Just looking at points scored, Broncos were 9th in points scored to Warriors who were 13th. So just in that, I think Walsh has a bit to improve there with that point. Like he'll add that spark from us at fullback. We had Tessie New and T. Marie Martin playing fullback who had been out of the game for so long. If Carrigan can stay fit and play more than 14 games, if Haas is fit, like he was playing with two busted shoulders. Like, I think there's, like, Farnsworth was out for most of the season and he was really a big, really good for us at the start. One thing I was looking at, I wasn't even aware of this, but Broncos play Panthers at down at Blue Bet Stadium, round one, which, like, you see Panthers, all right, solid game, yes, and you think, okay, it could be a walkover. I remember last year when Broncos faced Panthers down there and I don't think we had Haas and we actually played a pretty good, put up a good performance till about halftime and then we sort of fell off at the back end. But going there, I think it's the best time to probably play them with them new combinations, no Appy, no kick out, like I said before. I think it's a really good time to play them. Like, I'm not expecting us to get flogged going down there. I have high hopes if we've got a full fit team and there's no more negative press. But, and then we don't leave Queensland. We play Suncorp the next 5 games in a row up in Queensland. So they don't leave Queensland after that for 5 rounds after that. So the travel's not there. I think it's a really good, like, run for them there. I know they play Cowboys round 2, but it's always a big game. I think Cowboys really shocked us last year. The Broncos, I mean. The only thing, and I think this is why everyone's sort of not high on them, is because obviously all the negative media they've had recently, and we're not going to go into that, but I think they can really push if their heads are screwed on.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys have been training under lights all year because you've only got, I think you've got 3 weekend games all year again. It's all Friday, Thursday night, Friday night games.
There's a few... play 3 games in Sydney for the entire regular season.
Oh my goodness.
5 Saturdays, 3 Fridays, 3 Thursdays, 1 Sunday up at home. We do go to the Gabba for 3 games at the end of the year. And we go to Darwin for a game. But yeah, no, on paper it looks like a really tough draw and it does get a bit hard. Like, I think we finish with Storm. It's a hard game. But, yeah, if it wasn't, like, for Supercoach, am I looking at any of them? Not really.
Carrigan's a bit of a prospect. I was looking at Carrigan's figures and stuff the other day when I was messing around with the team.
Yeah, I'm interested in him, and he's like piqued my interest, really. Like, I know when the first we talked about Tarpany and the team picker opening up, and even before that we had that makeshift one. He was straight in my team with Haas. Carrigan was another one because I just think he really developed last year, being the Wally Lewis, receiving the Wally Lewis medal in State of Origin Series, being player of the series, then going over to the World Cup and playing alongside guys like Cameron Murray, Nathan Cleary, like Tedesco, all them guys, the experience, like he's a really smart footballer. But looking at his stats, like I said before, he needs to be on the field more than 14 games this year. And he's sort of come out and said that in an interview this week. He said, oh, to get to 300, I'm going to have to play for like 30 years going this rate. But he started pretty strong. He had like he started round 1, 2, and 3 with 62, 49, and 71 points playing. So he had a 60 average for 61 minutes. That's not great. I wouldn't say buy him off that. But then he was looking really good in round 4 against New Zealand. He did his MCL. He didn't come back till round 9. Then he played through till round 16, played State of Origin, like I said. Then he got suspended for a hip drop. We missed him for a couple of weeks, and I think that's where the decline started to happen. Big raps out of the club for him, future captain. The thing I'm really interested in is if he can play consistently. Like, he had a lot of games there, playing 60-plus minutes. And when he played 60-plus minutes, his lowest score was 55 points against Melbourne. And we all know what Melbourne can do and constrict teams.
That's solid too. Like, if we're talking an uptick in points for all these, you know, these front row, second row guys with the H8s, with the 10 metres and whatnot, we can only expect some more.
Yeah, so he's priced at a 62-point average, okay? If he was to get 60-plus minutes, which I don't think that's impossible, with like Cobbo says, yeah, Kevy's a good guy. He's not the greatest coach. Like, and we've said this about Haas. He's going to play his top two guys the minutes they want to play if they're in a tight struggle with the games. And I don't think any game's going to be a walkover for Broncos. But the games he played 60-plus minutes, he had 73 points from 68 minutes. So there was an 80-minute game there around 25, but even removing that, he had 73 points in 66 minutes. So it doesn't really impact that. I think a few people forget, and his base plus power, so he's hit-ups, tackle busts, tackles, 71, 72, 75, 70, 76, 55 was against Melbourne, so that 63 minutes he played, 55's all base power. He had 51 against Parra, which he actually had a try assist with, and two line breaks, and then he had a 75 base plus power. Now, looking back at 2020, he had a lot of games playing 80 minutes, so he has the motor. And people seem to forget that he returned from an ACL last year. And, like, you go into NRL physio and he's, like, said, guys who come back from ACL, usually that first year back, especially for, like, anyone, forwards, in particular, you sort of see a regression and you don't see him get back to that level. But he sort of went to another level and didn't show any sort of effect to his full performance. So, and the MCL he suffered was on the opposite knee. And, like, I just see him as a guy, like, he improved last year from what he did in 2020 before the injury. He was a bit of a plodder. He started to develop an offload, a passing game. I think him and Haas form a really dominant combination, 1-2 punch. He just needs to stay fit.
Yeah, and, yeah, that is there any chat about that hip flex at all? I haven't read anything or heard anything after he come back from it. So, what's that?
The hip flex tackle.
Oh no! I know he got suspended for that tackle, but didn't he have complaints about his groin or his pointer?
No, he had
the same as Tedesco.
He had an ankle He was carrying an ankle injury back end of the season.
Ah, right. I thought it was his groin or his around his hips.
No, he was carrying an ankle, and even though he was carrying that ankle injury, he had ankle clean out surgery end of the year. He played through the World Cup, and played that 80-minute game in round 25. So he would have been playing through some pain. So it'd be good to ankle clean out postseason suggests he was playing through pain in the back end of the season. That's from NRL Physio. So, I can see improvement. He is sort of you pay for what you get, like a base power guy, but I can see him probably being 10 points underpriced.
Yeah, and it's going to determine where Haas goes as well. His season goes, because they sort of bounce off each other when they both line up.
Yeah, and Haas is like, we talked about him last week, he's a guy that's locked into my front row spot.
Yes.
I think he's been heavily slept on by some. I think he can easily be 12 at least points underpriced. Like someone in front row who can hit out 75 average, like I'm locking him in. Like he's just 100K cheaper than what he should be.
Yeah, that's right. Moving on. So we've chatted about Broncos there in good length, good depth, which is great. We're getting on a bit of time, so just touching on the South squad. I think Thompson, everyone's going to have Thompson in their side if he starts and cements that side role there, 330K. A lot of people will have him. There is some chatter from the South members and boards and stuff that Cook will not be looking at playing full games this season. They're going to try and push him down minutes. I haven't got any concrete talk about that, but just on all the South fan page and stuff like that, people that are close to the club and watch the guys train every week and whatever are saying that Cook and Havili are fairly sharing that role. We talked about Latrell Mitchell just recently. So last season, 14 games for Latrell, 84-point average, high score of 152 and low score of 22. That 22 was when he done his injury, included in that 22 against St. George. He scored that try and then went off after that. So that's how many minutes did he play in that game? Only 14 minutes, so there you go. Removing that 22, his average probably jumps up to 87 maybe, or close to 86. I haven't worked that out, but it'll go up a few points. Just when Latrell come back from overseas and stuff, he pumped out scores of 99, 93, 130, 90, 152, 105, 76, and then 45 for his last game. Like, that's phenomenal. I know we just mentioned hopefully Tom Trbojevic can do the same, but I'm expecting big things from Latrell this year. He should get a full preseason. He's cemented himself as a senior leader in that side, I think. He's got a really good relationship with Cody Walker on and off the field. They've been, you know, good friends or whatnot growing up, even before they started playing the same side. And I think he demands it. He runs that team around at training as well. If you dive into all the fan stuff on, you know, TikTok and all that sort of stuff, Latrell Mitchell is screaming at training all the time. Him and Cody and Cam Murray and Cook, they've got something special going on. I'm expecting big stuff from the South camp this year and Latrell Mitchell especially.
Well, you guys don't really lose that much, do you?
Yeah, that's right. We lose Jackson Paulo. We lose Nichols. And there was someone else. I did read an article. We've lost three. Who would the third one be? I can't remember. Anyway, regardless, yeah, we haven't lost anyone. And Cody Nikorima, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the three that we've lost. So,
On Thompson, do you see him, like, because Milne suspended round one, do you see him keeping Milne out?
I think they'll... on the left side, I think you've got Tass and Johnston, obviously, but I wouldn't be surprised if Campbell Graham moves over there, over that left side, so that might keep Thompson and Milne on that right. But it's going to be hard to split them up, so Graham will probably stay on the right side with Tass and Johnston, and then, yeah, it'll either be Thompson or Milne, but they like Thompson. Thompson's gone. He's been with South for a while. He's a crowd favourite, so
I just
think he might stick around.
Yeah, I've got Thompson in my centre wing. He is like that risky sort of. He's there that round one. Can he solidify his spot? He does have a good base plus power. He had 42 and 36 in his two 80-minute games last year when he played. He is a try scorer. I think. Yeah. Like they need that hard runner, sort of like a Brian To'o in the South team. Like, because we know Johnston isn't the hard runner of the ball, taking a scoot. Like, he does have a scoot, gets in, does his work, but he doesn't really bump off a defender and make more come in to defend on him. Latrell Mitchell, he's not, you don't want him running 20 times from the back. And like, I know Milne was there last year, he did a job. But he was in and out of the side with Paulo there. And I think he really cost you at the end of last year with his careless high tackles. He did.
We were well and truly on top of that game. We were going to win that game regardless. So there was no need to act like he did. And I know, I think one out of the three I sort of backed him on. I think one out of the three was a bit wild. And by reffing standard, I mean, I didn't think it was worthy of a penalty or whatnot, but the other two were just, lack of a better word, man, they were just stupid. I don't know what he was thinking.
Yeah, so Thompson, I just think you got Cam Murray, Damian Cook, Latrell Mitchell and Walker. They're not going to put up with losing close games because being down a man or a silly penalty, like a two-point conversion because of a careless high tackle. I honestly think, if Thompson does really well, like they play Sharks round one, if he does really well round one, it's his spot to lose.
Yeah, and I think the overhanging issue with, you know, essentially South, I'm gonna say it, people will critique me, but I think with South essentially losing that grand final because of Latrell Mitchell's tear your face off suspension, I don't think they're gonna take that from any other player.
Yeah. So I know, like, we're both on really high on Latrell Mitchell. Someone else I want to talk about just briefly, like I think you might have or sort of alluded you to him last week, Cameron Murray. So he's priced at a, what's he priced at?
749.
Yep, at 71 point average. Now he did have that 1 minute, 1 point HIA in round 25 against Roosters in the massive yep. suspension send-off round. Mm-hmm. You take that out, he's got a 74-point average for the season. He also had a low 46-minute game, which he's going to have around State of Origin. He's going to be eased around that time. Yep. He had a 46-minute. Every other minute game you look at, up 53 is the next lowest, 58. They're his lowest three games. And he scored 37 points in that game. But you take that out, he's got a 77-point average. So he's down, what, 6 points? How do you see him starting the year?
I think nothing changes. I think with a full training, he's injury-free, second year of captain. I think he starts just as strong as what he plays. So I think his price is perfect for what he's going to put out. Just building on what you said with his average last year and stuff, two of them lower scores that he produced last year was when he got moved to centre as well. So obviously a downward uptick on points for that game.
Yep.
One of them was against Penrith. I think he got another lowish score against Penrith, but that's to be expected. But yeah, two games at centre, and I think he got moved to centre pretty early from memory as well. So I'd be fair to say that Cam Murray should be at a higher average output from last year. So he's probably priced exactly where he should be. And Cam Murray doesn't really fluctuate in price much anyway. In any years he's been playing NRL, he sits around that 700 you know, I don't think you rarely ever see him, you know, drop to 400 or 500. So, no, Cam Murray's in my side as well. And I haven't even considered taking him out or using his money to go elsewhere. Cam Murray will stay in mine.
I mean, interesting, because like, that's what sort of brought me to looking at Carrigan, because, like, I'm looking at probably a lighter version of Cam Murray. I know Carrigan doesn't have the attacking upside that Cam Murray does, but that 100K cheaper, could they average around that 70, 75, both of them? But, like, obviously Murray has a few points above him. Yeah, that's what I was sort of looking at and seeing what you thought.
I think, you know, Murray plays that similar role to Yo and stuff like that. I think he's got more chances of attacking stats than what Carrigan would have, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So, nah, here we are with our Broncos versus Souths again, mate. But I think Murray is not going to. He's definitely the better pick for Carrigan, even if he's 100K. If I was 100K short in completing my team before round one, I won't be taking 100K off Murray, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's about all we've got on our little schedule here, my friend. Is there anything else you want to add? So just real quickly down the bottom, we're well and truly over an hour at the moment, but have you made any changes to your team since we spoke last week on the podcast? If you have made changes, just let us hear one and explain why you've made that change.
Only, really, Carrigan. I'm sort of tossing and turning whether I put him in for that 70 odd sort of base plus power, just safe points every week, make 100K, doesn't have the buy till round 13 with a state of origin, hoping he could probably improve. He was playing a bit lame, bit injured last year, second season from ACL, improve, need him to be there for the team. And like just him versus like a Eli Katoa or a Garner or both of them, like the risk around them. So that's all I've been playing with. But yeah, trial dependent.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. One change I've made since the podcast last week is obviously I've got rid of Robson and I've put Grant in there, just for reasons I mentioned before. Grant's your lock and load, sit back and watch sort of thing. I know Cowboys have got that really good draw to start the season with, but like you just said, I think Melbourne's going to start strong-ish. I'm not expecting miracles from them and stuff with Pappy out and their forward pack the way it is, but I think Grant is going to be more effective, more elusive. Mm. And in the same category as Brandon Smith, like Grant doesn't mind a 10-metre run from dummy half and a bit of a show and go and a duck over the line, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I've gone Grant in the hooker in place of Robson. I'll jump on two. At the moment, I've also got Matt Burton in 5'8 as well. So I've moved Schuster up into that second row, and my 5'8 sit at Dewey and Burton.
What's the Burton?
I like the Bulldogs outfit. I like what they're doing. I think, I mean, I am expecting them to go much better this season, and I think Burton's got to be the focal attack of that. I think him and Addo Carr are going to have good seasons. I have had Addo Carr in my side. He's not currently in there at the moment, but I think he's a bit too expensive to start with. But I don't mind Burton. I can't remember which potty I was listening to. I think it was Supercoach 365. Jump over there and give them a listen. I like his stuff. They just did an analysis between Dewey and Burton, and I went back to my team and I couldn't decide which one, so at the moment I've got them both in there.
Mm. It is interesting you mention him. I'm not super high on him. Like, he has that run of games last year, like from round 9 through to 21, he had that 75 average from, like, against some solid sides, although they were, like, resting players, what have you. Like, Panthers, he played, had a 98 against them, Parramatta 82, 83 against Souths, 85 against Cowboys. So he had
got some low ones.
He had, like, and I was going to just say to that, like, he had a 28 against Sharks in round 16. So I don't know if I had any State of Origin players or whatever, but the back end of the year when he really dropped off and had the 23, 48, 31, 20, I know they had that mess like that Barrett got sacked and blah, 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 whatever, different coaches, sort of made me look at the year prior when he was at Panthers. And he had from 7 games either in the 6 or 7 covering for Cleary or Luai. He had a 70-point average. But again, had a low score in him. He had that 18 in 80 minutes against Parra. That's like that just screams red flags, like a goal-kicking guy, a run-first sort of halfback, 5'8". I think it was the 134 against Sydney, against the Roosters, and he was on practically nothing. And then he, like, just out of nowhere had 2 tries, and everyone was like, oh, my God, just saved my week because of him. And he has that sort of game about him. I'm semi-interested, but I would like to see the connection first before I sort of jump in. I don't not see improvement, but I just don't think, I don't know. So he's just, one I want to see first improved.
I think with that left edge now of Bulldogs, obviously you got Burton, Kikau and Addo Carr. You know, if Burton gets that ball to Addo Carr, Kikau's damaging as he is, like we all know that, but last year at Penrith, Kikau just gave such early ball to the guys on the wing. So, your May and whatnot. But if Kikau's given early ball to Addo Carr, he can just run around people. So,
well, that might be the thing. It might be more improvement for Addo Carr or the centre.
I've seen a lot of teams on the old Facebook with Addo Carr and Burton, and it makes sense. More Addo Carr than Burton, I suppose. But, I suppose Burton's in my side at the moment, but he's the one that I'll strip cash from if I need it elsewhere first, I think. But, you know, if you think of it this way, I've got my 13 done, so my 4 reserves going into round 1 will be Brandon Smith, Hines, Matt Burton, and then Tom Trbojevic.
Yeah. So
pretty solid, but, we'll see how we go. That just about wraps us up. Mate, anything else you want to quickly touch on?
No, that's it. I hope everyone who has listened and jumped on is enjoying it, and try not to, like, there's a lot of great pods out there and all talking Supercoach and NRL, and don't want to just be like similar to them. So just trying to have a bit of our chat and what we sort of really like about Supercoach and different hot takes we have. Be sure to subscribe, follow along. Hit us up if you have any questions or want us to talk about anything.
Jump on the Discord too, so could easily be reachable there. Send us a message. Any chats, always up for a chat, eh?
Yeah, jump on Supercoach Hub. I'll throw it up on my Twitter. Heap of good content on there, good conversations, good discussion.
Perfect, awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
It's a try.
Well, if you don't believe in fairy tales, we might see the giant fairy tale of all time here right now with Thurston, a kick from the sideline to win a premiership for the Cowboys.